Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Mazen Danov, Senior Economist, Uber Freight. Mazen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. I'm a fan of Uber Freight. I'm also a fan of your economic research that you're doing, so I can't wait to dive into this conversation today. Let's kick things off and start with the macroeconomic picture. The surface freight transportation market in the United States is currently valued at $1.06 trillion. I repeat, $1.06 trillion. Trucking accounts for 64% of this market. How do you see this market evolving over the coming years?
Yeah, that's like a billion-dollar question. So it is a huge market, as you said. Like, it runs in the background, so we don't know a lot about it as consumers. And before working with freight, I was working with passenger mobility. So I worked at Uber ATG, which was a self-driving branch at Uber. I have to say that the problems were much simpler. So you can really isolate a city and look at the city in isolation. You don't have to really care about what's going on with the rest of the world. And then I joined the freight world, where things are much more complicated. So suddenly things that are happening in Ukraine or in China affect our freight ecosystem in the US. And I think our systems are not very well prepared to deal with that, because it's unthinkable how these systems have been outdated and they haven't changed in the past few decades. And I think it's time to change, and I think change will happen on three fronts. The first I can think about is automation, so automation and technology. And that's not only automation when it comes to autonomous trucks or autonomous vehicles, but also automation in different daily tasks that we do in freight. Think about like tendering loads, or how do carriers book loads, or how carriers are getting paid. So there's a lot of phone calls going on there. They even use fax, a lot of paperwork, and this creates a lot of inefficiencies. And that's the first thing we're tackling as Uber Freight. Like, how do we automate things and how do we make them more efficient? How do we automate the payments? How do we make faster payments to drivers? And how do we make the whole process from tendering a load to booking the load to pickup and delivery as smooth as possible? So I think we'll continue to have more automation over the coming years. The second front is sustainability. I find it really, really unthinkable that 30% of the miles on the freight network, on the US freight network, are empty. This is a huge inefficiency. And I mean, there are varying estimates. Like, some estimates range from 15% to 30%. We think it's closer to the higher end, especially for local hauls. Not only this is bad for the planet, so we're polluting a lot, but it's also bad for the drivers, because most of the time they're not getting paid for these miles. So we have a lot of progress on that front as well to do. And the third front is more visibility. And you can have different types of visibility. The first one, which I think is like the easier one, which we're almost already there, is like tracking your shipment, knowing the exact origin, destination, where is it on the road, along the road, when is it supposed to arrive. So there's a lot of valuable information in that. But there are other types of visibility as well. So we think about visibility when it comes to transparency, like great transparency, because shippers have been paying huge amounts for freight. And in the past, it has been mostly a black box. So I think we have started developing tools like Market Access, where shippers can have real-time visibility into how the market is behaving and all of this, how rates are fluctuating, so that they're not overpaying or underpaying for their freight. Because underpaying is also bad for them. They'll lead to their freight getting rejected. And then there's the more broader visibility, which is visibility into supply chains, into like where supply and demand are trending, how the whole economy is affecting the freight market. And that's what we're trying to inform our shippers also with like long-term partnerships with them.
When you look at 30% empty miles, that's a huge number as we try and move towards a more sustainable society. We start introducing alternative fuels. That has to be solved. And that's something that yourself and several of your competitors in the space are working on. We're doing it, and so everybody's doing it for better. But you mentioned more visibility there and transparency. Is that helping Uber Freight build trust? Because it reminds me of the early days. I know that we're going to go back to the traditional Uber side with taxis, and they had to, okay, we're going to phone in a taxi to the dispatcher, and there was no transparency. Okay, that ride's $30. And if you go on the next day, it's $20. There was no consistency. Along comes Uber on the passenger side. and you have consistency, you know, you can go from point A to point B, it's roughly, say, $9 every time. You're not varying depending on where the dispatcher wants to go. Is that the same effect that you're doing on the Uber Freight side by bringing transparency to the pricing?
Yes, it's a similar concept. So when it comes to the, how the freight market currently works, it's based on these annual, or like most of them are annual contracts. And it's a bidding process where shippers want to move their freight and carriers bid on this freight, like on a lane by lane basis. And most of the time, these contracts are only good on paper. So as an example, like the market fluctuates over the lifetime of a bid. And because of that, prices can go up or down. So when prices go up, we see carriers rejecting a lot of the shippers' freight. So they can make a lot of money elsewhere in the spot market or moving other types of freight. So they end up rejecting freight that was tendered to them even under a contract. And at the same time, when the market goes down, we see shippers trying to renegotiate the rates they agreed upon with the carriers. So most of the time, these contracts are only good on paper, and that creates a lot of inefficiencies in the system, especially in times like the past 2 years where freight rates have been very volatile. So just to explain what I'm saying, in 2020, we saw the highest increase in rates we have ever seen in history. And then in 2022, we saw the largest decrease we have seen in spot rates. And these contract rates tend to follow spot rates. So we're seeing a crazy amount of volatility. And that's why you start to see that these contracts are becoming inefficient. So we need more tools that can adapt to this level of volatility. And we think that tools like Market Access, which is a plus model, is one of the best tools out there so that shippers know what the current rates are in the market. And then they're paying for that based on a cost plus model.
You're bringing transparency. So what is the average lifetime of a bid? Is it a prescribed industry standard, say 3 days, 5 days, 2 weeks? Is there a prescribed standard on how long that bid is?
So usually bids go over most of them are for a year. So a shipper can tender loads over a year for a fixed rate, agreed upon rate for a given lane. Some of them are shorter than that. Like we've seen like 3 month bids to 6 month bids to like longer than a year. But in general, most of the time, it's around 1 year. So over a year, a lot of things can change, especially in these volatile times.
A lot of things can change. We've all seen it around the supply chain. We saw what happened with COVID in the Port of LA, Long Beach, with the backup there, not having enough trucks to go there. The one thing that we can all agree on from an economic standpoint is that the market that you participate in, it's growing. This was fascinating. Uber Freight generated $2.134 billion in revenue in 2022, and the company's on pace to generate $7.484 billion in 2022, according to Bloomberg. That's really impressive growth. What's leading to that growth?
I would say there are different factors leading to that. So the first factor is our continued investment in technology. So we're using technology to drive costs lower for everyone, for carriers and for shippers. As a couple of examples, I would say like we're using bundles to minimize empty miles. So we're like matching loads. If you have a load going from A to B, like can we find a load going from B to A to minimize the empty miles in between? So we're using technology to provide both what carriers need and what shippers need and reduce their costs as well. The second factor is the significant expansion into new verticals, especially with the Transplace acquisition. So prior to that, Uber Freight was like a digital platform or a digital brokerage, and now we're much more than that. We have new offerings, like we have services like managed transportation services or TMS software or things that expand our horizons broadly. So we're not only seen as a middleman between freight transactions, but also as a partner, as a reliable partner, and like even as an advisor to a lot of shippers, to thousands and thousands of shippers. And the third thing that happened is that we had market tailwinds. So especially with COVID, we have seen demand surging to levels that we couldn't even think about them before, especially spending on goods. We saw all the reshoring in the manufacturing sector, so we saw a huge expansion there as well. And with that, not only demand increased, but also since June 2020, we have seen more than 200,000 carriers obtaining their operating authorities and coming into trucking. Because the spot rates were surging and these carriers were entrepreneurs chasing high spot rates. So we've seen a lot of mostly like small companies and owner operators joining the market. And for these, Uber Freight was the perfect solution because they can log into the app, register on the app in no time, and then book their first load in a matter of minutes. So for them, Uber Freight was the easiest source to get access to tons and tons of freight.
You mentioned reshoring. If that trend continues, we're seeing that in the lithium space where more mines are now being built in America. There's more manufacturing. Intel's working at a foundry in Ohio. There's various new factories coming to America. If the reshoring of goods comes to America, will there be enough freight capacity to move those goods to where they have to be moved to?
Yeah, I think it's a cycle. So I would say that freight capacity is always chasing demand. And the equilibrium level is so elusive that we can't get to it. So sometimes you undershoot and sometimes you overshoot. The last year, we had huge growth in freight capacity, whether it's owner-operators obtaining their authorities or even hiring became much easier as some of the constraints around that eased. So as an example to that, I'll talk about what happened in 2020. So in 2020, when COVID started, demand plummeted overnight. So demand collapsed, whether it's manufacturing demand, all the factories were shut down, or consumer demand because everyone was scared to spend. So that was followed by a wave of layoffs in the trucking sector. So trucking companies laid off about 90,000 drivers or so. And then the unexpected thing happened is that demand came back overnight. So in a couple of months, demand was at levels that exceeded before, prior to the pandemic. So demand surged again, but then the fleets discovered they overreacted with the layoffs and they couldn't bring drivers back because drivers didn't feel like working anymore with COVID, especially that they were receiving some unemployment insurance and other benefits. So a lot of drivers were discouraged from coming back to the labor force. And that lasted until mid-2021 to late 2021. Where these unemployment insurance were lifted and then rates were so high that incentivized drivers to come back to the labor force. And since mid-2021, we have seen a surge in capacity. So we have seen drivers coming back, hiring easing. So a lot of large fleets have started hiring a lot of drivers as well. And some of the equipment-related constraints, like the semiconductor shortage, started to ease as well. So we've seen more trucks as well entering the market. So that was one of the causes where we saw spot rates starting to decrease again in terms of freight rates and especially in trucking. So yeah, right now we have capacity. We have enough capacity for the demand, but it's always a cyclical, very unpredictable environment.
We're currently in an unpredictable economic environment. For the past year, U.S. consumer spending on goods, when accounting for inflation, has been flat. Inflation's currently pegged at 8.3%. And I want to run a scenario by you because you explained a COVID scenario. In a scenario where the Federal Reserve, let's say they hike rates to 5%, unemployment will rise to 4.9% in 2024, according to economists at Bloomberg. If this happens, consumer spending on goods will further decrease. That's an example of a scenario there. Can you use your data to model a scenario like that, model a scenario like what happened in COVID to properly prepare Uber Freight for how the demand might fluctuate in the market?
Yeah, so we're looking at a lot of data sources, whether it's our own data or external data. And you're right, demand has been flat, but it has been flat at very high levels. So it's at levels that are currently, even with they have been falling for the past 3 or 4 months, slightly falling in terms of consumer spending on goods. But it hasn't been falling to the level that it's below its pre-COVID trend or its pre-COVID average. We have been when we look at the pre-COVID trend, which means that what would have been the level of spending if COVID hasn't happened, we're still 10% or 5 to 10% above that trend. So we're still at very high levels of spending. I think even if demand does go down, which we expect it to go down slightly, even if that happens, it'll be more of a normalization to the pre-COVID levels or to the pre-COVID trend and nothing compared to what we saw, let's say, in 2008.
What if we enter a recession? You can make the argument, a lot of economists do it, Mohammad Al-Erzarian, he does a really good job with this, that it's a Fed-induced recession. Then what happens?
Yeah, so we definitely expect to see some effect on freight volumes. When we talk about freight volumes, we talk about I'd like to divide them into some buckets. They're spending on goods, which can be durable goods, non-durable goods. So durable goods are things that we buy every once in a while. Think about a fridge or a car or a laptop. These are things that you don't buy on a daily or weekly basis. And this type of freight is the most sensitive to economic downturns. So if you think about the past recession, that went down by 15% when this happened in 2008. So this is very sensitive to economic downturns. And then there's the consumer, like everyday goods or the non-durable goods. So these are things like food or clothing or things that we buy for the short term. And that's not very sensitive to economic downturns. So the good news is that there will always have freight to move. And that represents the majority of consumer spending on goods. So even in 2008, which was like a very severe recession, that only went down by like 3%. So the good news is that we will always have freight to move. But then there's other sectors like manufacturing, housing. These are sectors that might suffer as well in case of a recession. So we're already seeing that housing demand is going down. That specifically affects flatbed freight, not like the standard dry van freight. But also like the manufacturing sector is prone to these changes in rates or in demand in general. So in 2008, we saw manufacturing output plummeting by 20%. We are not expecting like anywhere near that if a recession happens. So hopefully it will be much milder than that. But these are like, I would say these are like the upper bounds. So in total, like if we think about the total volume of freight, we are expecting like if a recession happens, we should be expecting like single digit reductions in freight volumes. Nothing more than that. What I always like to focus on is that demand is only part of the story, and freight supply is much more volatile than demand, and it has been historically much more volatile. And it has been like the main driver of freight cycles. So demand has been more or less stable, especially prior to COVID, but supply is much more volatile. And that's why these freight cycles, in terms of freight rates going like the ebbs and flows of freight rates, they don't necessarily coincide with economic cycles. So we might have a scenario next year, for example, where we might have a recession, we will have lower demand, but we still might see freight rates going up just because of how supply is behaving.
You have supply, and then we have drivers. The American Trucking Associations, they forecast a shortage of 84,000 truck drivers this year. If we do go into a recession, we have a driver shortage. Me just putting on, I'm not an economist, you are, but it just seems like the cost to ship goods would go up. Am I correct on analyzing that, or how do you see that scenario playing out in a potential recession?
Yeah, so when I look at the freight supply, I wouldn't necessarily label it as a shortage, but I think there are two factors at play there. The first factor is that the cyclicality of the freight market. I think supply is always chasing demand, and sometimes it overshoots, sometimes it undershoots, like what happened in the past 2 years. So we overshot in terms of the amount of capacity reduction as an economy. So we cut the number of driver jobs by like 90,000. And then we discovered, oh, we needed these drivers, so let's hire them back. And then 2 years later, we started seeing like that we might have excess drivers now. A lot of drivers joined the market recently, chasing high spot rates, and now demand has fallen off. So it's always that supply is chasing demand, but never getting to that sweet spot of equilibrium. The other issue is that the long-term trend. So the long-term trend we have seen, I wouldn't call it a shortage necessarily, but an issue of evolving preferences of truck drivers. So like in the past few decades, we have seen like truck driving was a lucrative job. It was like a nice job where drivers can make a lot of money, and there was not a lot of competing jobs as well. But recently, we have seen drivers' preferences shifting from that, especially from long-distance driving to local driving. So they want to stay closer to home, closer to their families, and that's why they don't want to be driving from LA to Chicago every week. And with that, we had a lot of new opportunities coming up to truck drivers, whether that was in the field of, like, let's say, warehousing or local delivery or parcel delivery. So all of these are sectors that were booming in the past decades, and they attracted a lot of labor from truck drivers. And that's why we have felt that, yes, there is a driver shortage and it's getting worse by the year. But in an economic sense, it's not a shortage. There's no like external factors forcing a shortage. It's just like changing market dynamics.
It's being driven by preferences. Well, you mentioned that the drivers prefer short haul versus long haul. The American Trucking Associations are also predicting by 2030, the shortage will grow to 160,000. So you look at the American Trucking Association's data, you look at what you describe, which I've also heard and done independent research on, the preference for short haul. It seems to me that we're creating the perfect opportunity for autonomous trucking to be that long haul middle mile. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we definitely agree with that. And we think that serving the middle mile is the perfect opportunity for autonomous trucking to have a great product market fit. Why is that? Because as I said before, drivers prefer short hauls to long hauls, and they want to stay closer to home. And on the other hand, there's like some technological constraints about approaching this problem. So it's somewhat easier to for a truck to drive on a highway than on local roads. And you had previously guests from Embark and Torque talking about that. This seems to be like the easier short-term problem to solve. And we don't want to wait to reap the benefits of autonomous trucking. We don't want to wait until the technology is fully mature. So a hub-to-hub model, or like a first-mile, last-mile driver-based model where autonomous trucks will only handle the middle mile, seems like a perfect fit, not only from a technological standpoint, but also from a driver preferences standpoint.
I'm going to make it from an economic standpoint, it makes sense. And I want to highlight a paper that you recently authored, for the record, was absolutely brilliant. Everybody should read it. The paper is called The Future of Self-Driving Technology and Trucking, a Roadmap for Evolving Freight Transportation with Autonomous Trucks. It's available on the Uber Freight website. I highly recommend it. I want to highlight something in the paper that you and your co-authors stated. I'm going to read it to you here. At Uber Freight, we envision a bright future for the trucking industry, one where truck drivers and self-driving trucks connect long-haul and local routes, thus complementing each other on the capabilities and preferences. We think this model will support the growth in truck freight demand, create safer roads, provide better trucking jobs, and make goods more affordable and available for everyone. That's a summary of what we've discussed so far. Now I want to go into my favorite topic, that's your background, economics. From an economic perspective, how will the model work?
Yeah, so in this model, we're dividing each load into three parts. So we're dividing it into a first mile, last mile, and the middle mile. And the first and last miles are really like where the local street driving occurs. So that's where we're going to need these human drivers or local haul drivers, whereas the autonomous truck can take care of the middle mile across the highway. So from an economic standpoint, this model will make sense if the combined cost of the first mile, the middle mile, and the last mile will be comparable or competitive with what we are currently paying to human drivers. And that's what we're trying to achieve. Like, how can we drive the cost of this transfer hub model, especially the cost of the first mile and last mile, down to make it as competitive as possible? So we've been looking at different ways to procure the first mile and last mile. The first way we looked at was that let's look at the spot market. So with the spot market, we find drivers to move these one-off loads based on just like the way we procure capacity on the Uber Freight app currently. So we will find the driver to come pick up a load and deliver it. And we found out that this model will result in economic feasibility for a lot of our lanes. So we found out that even if we pay drivers for local haul, for these first and last mile, as much as we're currently paying them for local hauls, this model will be profitable and feasible for a lot of lanes. But then that's not the only model. So we also talked about dedicated fleet model, where we partner with a fleet to be present, to offer capacity that's always present at these transfer hubs or facilities to serve the first and last miles. And both models have advantages and disadvantages. So maybe like the dedicated fleet model will have advantages when it comes to consistency and reductions in cost. But the first model will provide more flexibility, especially in areas where you don't have enough demand. And the main findings are that both of these models can be profitable on a lot of lanes, especially long-haul lanes. And why do I focus on long-haul lanes? Because we're always thinking about the cost per mile. So we should think that we should minimize the cost per mile to be competitive with the human drivers. And with longer hauls, the cost associated with these first and last mile becomes a smaller fraction of the total cost as compared to shorter hauls. So that's why longer hauls are more profitable under a hub-to-hub model than shorter hauls.
We mentioned earlier the data that Uber Freight has. You have a vast amount of data. Are you using that data to work with your customers to advise or consult on where the hubs should go? And is that, and if you are doing that, is that based on freight demand historically and where you're projecting that demand to increase in the future?
Yeah, exactly. So we have $17 billion of worth of data of freight under management. So we work with more than 130,000 carriers, which are digitally enabled on the freight platform, and tens of thousands of shippers as well. And we record hundreds of thousands of transactions and freight movements every year. And we use all of these data to inform decisions that will help our partners, whether they're shippers or carriers or EV developers, on how to prioritize their expansion or how to optimize the integration of AVs into their networks. A couple of examples to that is that we can use our data to inform our partners how to expand across the freight network geographically, which lanes have the highest level of demand, and what are the characteristics of this demand in terms of the, let's say, the weight distribution or the type of freight being moved or the time of day variations of pickups and drop-offs. So all of this is valuable data that can help our AV partners plan what the next lane or fuel lanes are going to be. We also plan to use our data to help them also inform where they should locate these transfer hubs or transfer facilities strategically to minimize their costs as well. Because when we talk about this transfer hub model, the main cost there is that of the first mile and last mile. This is what we have leverage on as Uber Freight, and we want to minimize that. And the way by doing that is minimizing first the truck operating costs and the driver time, which is the bigger part of the cost. So we don't want drivers to spend a lot of time on the roads driving from transfer hubs to facilities, because that's a lot of time wasted. So we want to locate these transfer hubs strategically so that we are minimizing the total distance in the network or the total cost in the network for these first and last mile operations.
Do you view some of these transfer hubs in the future perhaps being directly connected to the highway with a dedicated access road or right off the highway where there tends to be land? Is that how you're envisioning it, or are you envisioning it going further into the city?
So we envision them to be closer to the highway at first, just because of the capabilities of autonomous trucks. So we think that autonomous trucks will be driving on highways much sooner than local streets. If you think about the number of capabilities required by autonomous vehicles to drive on local streets, dealing with pedestrians and bicyclists and left turns and unprotected turns and all of that, and street parking. So it becomes a headache. So even for a passenger car, now think about a truck with a much heavier weight with much longer dimensions. So we think that trucks should be driving closer to the highway much sooner than local streets. And that's why we envision that these transfer hubs will be located closer to highways.
It makes a lot of sense for a variety of reasons. One, it makes economic sense, but then it also makes public sense, trust for the public, where the public knows that the 18-wheeler will be very close to the highway, not going by a school or perhaps down a street. That builds trust with the public, which will help scale this technology. What you describe to me seems like you're building a digital freight network that's going to create a tremendous amount of value for the autonomous trucking industry. You have public partnerships with Waymo and Aurora now. How are they using Uber Freight to grow their businesses?
Yeah, so there are different approaches where how they're using their data. So first, Uber Freight will be the source of freight demand for a lot of these. We can offer them access to $17 billion worth of freight, and that's a lot of freight. So our partnership with Waymo ensures that billions and billions of miles will be on the Uber Freight network within the coming years. And when we think about that, we think about what Uber Freight can provide to these in addition to that. So because we have a network of 130,000 carriers on our platform, we can easily provide the first and last mile capacity. So Uber Freight will be partnering with these partners to provide first and last mile, but also freight relays. And what are freight relays? I'll give an example here. Suppose you have a load going from Dallas to Los Angeles, and it's a very long lane. And just throwing an example there, that let's say an autonomous carrier can only move from Dallas to Phoenix, then Uber Freight can take care of the rest of the load going from Phoenix to Los Angeles with the help of a human driver. And that gives access to much more volumes to autonomous vehicle partners, because we're not only giving them this end-to-end exclusive volumes of freight going exclusively between Dallas and Phoenix or Phoenix and Dallas, but we're giving them access to a much, much higher amount of freight, which is all the freight passing on the I-10 or the I-20.
You just described what I've thought that will be the answer for a long time is the hybrid approach, where it's partial automation for the whole way. So you have the autonomous truck, you write to Phoenix, and then it goes in to a human truck. I totally believe that's the future. Is that where Uber Freight is looking to build out, quote unquote, it's called the hybrid network?
Yes. Yeah. And that's how we envision the future will be over the next years and even decades. We will always have a network that is shared between human drivers and autonomous vehicles. So we're planning for that network, and we're helping our partners make it a reality. And we're helping also like our shippers understand what are the impacts of that on their networks, how they need to change their operations, or like how they need to integrate it within their current supply chains. And one of the most important aspects there is embracing solutions like drop trailers. So instead of a truck waiting to load and unload, which is like 2 hours wasted every time for each move, for loading and for unloading, a truck can arrive with a trailer and drop it at the facility, pick up another loaded trailer and take it back. So, and that process takes about like 15 to 30 minutes if it's done right. So we're saving a lot of drivers' time as well. So this creates a lot of efficiencies. It removes a lot of wasted time for drivers as well. And it should result in more consistent and more available supply. There was a study by MIT recently that showed that we don't really have a driver shortage problem. It's a driver utilization problem. So if we can improve the availability of drivers and minimize this wasted time, we'll be done with the driver shortage. So think about a driver driving like 10 hours a day and spending 2 hours loading and 2 hours unloading. That's like a third of the driver's time spent just waiting, doing nothing. Well, the driver could be moving loads. And then we wouldn't have the so-called driver shortage issue if that was the case.
The name of the game is optimization. You have to optimize it. You have to optimize it for the driver's time, and you want to optimize it for carbon emissions. So you're doing two really good things there. What you're describing in the model, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, this is the future. Then I'm putting my economics logistics hat on. Is there a limit to how much freight can go through this model, or can it go? Is it all about how many trucks and autonomous trucks are available?
So the limit is like how much freight is out there really in the future. When we think about it, we think about different capabilities of trucks and how much they can move at different times. Currently, combination trucks move about like 180 billion miles every year based on the PTS. But then we start considering like how much of that is actually feasible for autonomous trucks. The first thing is like how much of that is local versus long distance. Maybe like 2/3 or 75% of that is long distance freight, which can be moved under a transfer hub model. And then we think about different types of freight, which moves on different trailer types. Like, are autonomous trucks going to support the flatbed freight or reefer freight? We think that's more in the longer term. So we'll probably start with dry van freight, which is even like probably like 30 to 50% of that. So maybe it's about like 50 billion miles or so. And then when we go into like, where are these going to start operating? These autonomous vehicles, we think it's mostly going to be concentrated on interstate highways rather than your local highways. And that's even half of that. So we think that the immediate opportunity should be around 25 billion miles of freight every year. And that's a large number. So this is your immediate opportunity, and you can expand much broadly beyond that.
The autonomous trucking companies are going to expand. They're already in the process. There was the big cluster for a while in Arizona, and now there's the cluster in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and those trucks are actively running on a daily basis from Dallas-Fort Worth to Houston, and now we're seeing movement towards Atlanta and then into Jacksonville. So you're basically seeing that the whole Southeast eventually, I believe from Arizona to Florida, eventually be connected by autonomous trucks. When? Not putting a timeline on it, but sometime in the future is what I'll say on that front. And so you and I clearly agree that this is going to roll off from a hub-to-hub model. You're sitting there on this vast amount of really interesting data. How do you envision the hub-to-hub model rolling out on day one? Will the autonomous trucking companies partner with Uber Freight for the data and then partner with a developer perhaps to build the infrastructure? Is that kind of how you see it rolling out, or how do you see it rolling out?
Yeah, so we're already having pilots as Uber Freight. We're already running autonomous pilots with Aurora. And these pilots are like, you can think of the AV company acting as a carrier on the Uber Freight platform. So Uber Freight tenders the load. Uber Freight tenders the load on behalf of the carrier, and then the AV carrier, on behalf of the shipper, sorry, and then the AV carrier will move this load, and then Uber Freight will find the capacity to move the first and last mile. So we think that will start on a small scale, maybe like a few lanes, and then it will expand incrementally over the coming years. You're right about the geographical area. It's mostly the southwestern part of the United States. And that's because this area is more favorable in terms of regulations and in terms of weather constraints and in terms of freight volumes as well. So there's a ton of freight volume traveling on the I-10 and I-20 on the Texas Triangle, even between like LA and California. LA and San Francisco is one of the busiest lanes in the US. So there's a lot of freight volume, but there's a lot of favorable conditions that support the adoption as well, including weather and regulations.
From an economic standpoint, are there any downsides to the hub-to-hub model?
We don't think this is a final model. So we think of it as a stepping stone. And we believe that one day we will be able to achieve like end-to-end operations where autonomous trucks will be able to drive from the source facility to the end facility. But instead of waiting until that happens, we think of the hub-to-hub model as a way to start reaping the benefits of autonomous trucking, whether it's providing the needed capacity, complementing the existing capacity for drivers, or the safety benefits, or benefits in terms of consistency. So we shouldn't wait until we achieve full autonomy. So we really look at it as a stepping stone. In terms of economic disadvantages, I think it's less feasible for a lot of shorter hauls just because the fraction of the cost of the first mile and last mile becomes too high. And there might be some friction, which we will need like a lot of innovation to mitigate. If you think about dividing each haul into three parts, then a lot of things can go wrong. Think about like drivers not showing up or delays, or you'll need a lot of planning to make sure that everything goes right. And we're already planning for that as Uber Freight.
To me, it seems that Uber Freight is working to accelerate the growth of the autonomous trucking industry as a whole. You're sitting there saying, okay, hub to hub, we've figured out an economic model, the technology is going to work, and then when we eventually achieve full autonomy, we'll move to that model. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, yes, definitely. Uber Freight aims to be this platform that combines both human drivers and autonomous trucks, and really to fulfill the needs of carriers and shippers, to make sure like goods arrive on time for everyone. So carriers want local hauls, they want access to freight, they want consistent freight, and shippers want consistent capacity as well. So we think that a hybrid network can provide the best to both players, and this can improve the overall efficiency in the system as well. So when I talk about like the time that is wasted, we can avoid a lot of that through not only drop trailers, but let's say reductions in hours of service. So we know that truck drivers can't be driving for 24 hours a day. They have to take these breaks on long hauls. But autonomous trucks will not have that limitation. And if you think about that economically, that's like a lot of tied up capital that is held on a truck. It's freed now. It's free to move, and you're reducing your inventory holding costs substantially.
Without Uber Freight, where would the autonomous trucking company find their freight? It seems that you're just sitting here and serving up freight on a gold platter. And if I'm an autonomous trucking company, I'm banging down your door and saying, how do we do business together?
Yeah, that's correct. So the advantage of partnering with Uber Freight is that now you have access to all of this capacity, not only freight volumes, but local drivers as well. So you have access to local drivers to take care of your first mile, your last mile, and you have access to billions and millions of freight miles that are available to your network as well. As I mentioned earlier, not only inclusive freight miles, but freight relays as well, which gives you access to all the pass-through traffic on a given lane.
You're doing it right. Overall, how do you see autonomous trucks integrating into the Uber Freight model? Do you just see more partners coming online in the future, more capacity as trucks and the technology matures? How do you see that evolving?
Yes, we definitely hope to see more capacity on the Uber Freight platform. We think that we'll provide the necessary tools to optimize how autonomous trucks are utilized. These are expensive assets and should be running all the time, so they shouldn't be idle. Like the last thing you want is to have an autonomous truck sitting there doing nothing, even though you paid a ton of money for that. So we think Uber Freight will not only provide capacity and like freight volume, but will also provide all the optimization tools to help carriers and shippers like utilize these to their most.
If the assets aren't running, they're not generating revenue, so you want them to run as much as humanly possible.
Yes.
In your opinion, Mazen, what is the future of Uber Freight?
I think it's a hybrid network, definitely a hybrid network that is optimized for the needs of carriers and shippers. So we're optimized to provide carriers with the local freight that they need. And even for those who prefer long distance freight, they will still be able to find it. It's optimized also for the needs of shippers who want more consistency, and they don't want to be through like what they've been through in the past 2 years again. They're still having nightmares about that. So we want to make sure that this never happens again. And we think that autonomous trucks will be able to provide some consistency. So it's not freight that enters and exits the market abruptly with freight cycles. It's more consistent capacity that's always there. And then more importantly, it's optimized also to us what the planet needs, not only what carriers and shippers needs. We need fewer empty miles. We can work on that with our AV partners. We can optimize how we bundle loads or which truck picks up which load in order to really optimize our network and drive these empty miles down.
Consistency and optimization are two keys to success in business. And Mazen, as we look to wrap up this insightful conversation, what would you like our listeners to take away with them today?
I would say that autonomous trucks will not be just there to replace drivers. I think they will be a necessary part of our supply chains that will complement what drivers are doing. So it's not just like something that's nice to have, but a very integral and important part of our future supply chains. I'd also say that it's not a flip of a switch. It's always a gradual expansion. So we will not have a world where autonomous trucks will replace all drivers overnight. So that's not going to happen. We'll see them evolving gradually, and we'll see more and more of them in the future, but it's not going to be a sudden change. And I think it's a joint effort. Like no single entity can put autonomous trucks on the road on its own. It's a joint effort across carriers, shippers, and companies like Uber Freight.
As Mazen said, Uber Freight is ushering in the hybrid network because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is Uber Freight. Mazen, thank you so much for coming on The Road to Autonomy today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulteco Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulteco Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.